FW presents, panel by panel, the show that dissects a single comic book panel from the last 85 years of comics history each episode. I'm Siskoid, and our panelist today is, well, my favorite podcaster of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, Chris Ranklin. Hi, Chris.
Oh, man. There goes the network.
I love the, I just light the fuel, some jealousies within the group. Everybody's just,
I think you,
yeah, everybody's just trying to get my approval. Everybody wants to be the favorite, so it gives me a position of power.
Siskoid always liked you best.
Yeah. As a person, Chris, I'm not saying anything about your content. It's just as a person, you're my favorite.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
That leaves room for the others to jostle for position. So panel by panel, you agreed to do one of these.
Yeah, I think it's a whole lot of fun. I thought you guys were crazy when you cooked this up for the April Fool's thing, but it's really developed into, like we said before we started recording, it's like the subatomic examination of comics. So I'm really digging it. So I wanted to get in on the fun.
Yeah, and I'm hoping you like the panel that you got. You know, not everybody can get a Jerry Ordway or George Perez. You know, there are all sorts out there. So we'll see how this goes. Let's do it. The randomized series of choices using my database of available comic book materials, either physical or digital, prior to the recording. We rolled up a year, a month, a comic on the stands that month, a page, and finally, a panel. And in this case, we rolled the year, 1985, the month of September. Among the 141 comics out that month, the revolving finger falls on The Thing, number 31, actual cover date, January 1986. Story by Mike Carlin, art by Ron Wilson and Kim DeMulder, page 17 of 22. And there are 9 panels on that page, very busy. We got panel 5, and you'll find that panel in the show notes at fireandwaterpodcast.com. So did you read The Thing comic in the 80s, Chris?
I picked it up here and there. I was reading Fantastic Four more often, but by that point, you know, I picked up The Thing occasionally. And honestly, a lot of what was going on in it, I knew from Ohotmu because of like all the wrestling connections in The Thing, like Unlimited Class Wrestling and things like that. I'm like, okay. And I got, you know, I figured out who some of these characters were that I'd seen pop up on covers and when I flipped through the book. And but no, I wasn't a regular reader, unfortunately.
Same here. It was a comic that served a purpose, and that purpose was letting She-Hulk be on the Fantastic Four. While The Thing did his own thing, which is something I agreed with. But a lot of The Thing comics at the beginning, he's just wandering beyond her world, sort of. He's on a patch, and on this patch, it's like gothic horror. And when, you know, he moves on, and he's got like these, I don't know, surreal stories, really. So that I never really hooked into that. And when he comes back to Earth, yeah, it's all the wrestling and stuntman stuff. I think The Thing is basically that character, you know, that he's sort of living an as normal a life as can be in the circumstances. Like, what would this kind of guy do? So he's finding these weird odd jobs.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was a staple of Marvel 2-in-1 as well. Let's describe the panel.
Okay.
You want to do the honors or?
Sure, yeah. So there's a dialogue caption box up top that reads, I don't know, Dez, but I think if he was out here, he'd end up killing Trimble. Well, we don't know who Trimble is, but then another dialogue box below seems to be from a different person that says, can't say I blame him, Cher. And then we get the actual artwork in the panel itself, which is Ben Grimm, The Thing, opening a refrigerator door. He seems to be getting probably a beer out of the refrigerator, I would guess. And Ben, in his usual dialect that we see in the comics, says, I know what I'm not wanting. I'll stay out of the way and inside this fridge. So Ben is, you know, apparently there's been some kind of argument, and Ben has gone inside to basically sulk and get a beer. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, that's what it is. And it always strikes me how short and stumpy The Thing really is. You know, in my mind, he's as big as the Hulk. But no, he's always very... here, he could fit inside the fridge if he wanted to.
Right.
You know, he could actually go inside that fridge.
Yeah. Now, he has bent over a little bit. But yeah, he's not as... You know, sometimes you see, like, especially like when they do an action figure of The Thing, sometimes he'll be as big as the Hulk. But I guess, I don't know, I don't remember what his Ohotmu statistics were. You guys haven't got to it yet on Ohotmu or not, so I don't know. But I don't think he's actually supposed to be like 7 foot tall. He's supposed to be like almost, you know, slightly above average male height, but just, you know, a whole lot heavier because he's made of basically rock. Right. So
yeah, he's wide more than he is tall. Mm-hmm. Now maybe I got that impression from the remember the cartoon series where the kid just punched his rings together and became
the thing.
Well, the thing was pretty big in that.
Yeah, thing ring, do your thing. Yeah.
I thought maybe that's where I got it. What do you think of the art here?
You know, it's completely functional. Ron Wilson was kind of the thing artist because he had drawn Marvel 2-in-1 forever, and I think he drew it for a while, then left, and then came back and drew it pretty much. He's kind of the Jim Aparo of the thing in a way, because he drew the team up comic. And then took over the spinoff comic, you know, like just like Jim Aparo did with Brave and the Bold and then Batman and the Outsiders. Yeah, he's just kind of the thing solo artist, definitely of this era. And you know, this was when the thing's biggest popularity, I would guess, because he basically held down two titles for, you know, the better part of two decades. So yeah, he's kind of the guy. So I can't really question him. I mean, it looks fine. You know, it's obviously a pretty small panel because there was 9 panels on the page, but you know, he's totally selling the idea. It's not exciting, but we've got this rock man. Of course, we know who Ben Grimm is, but if you didn't, there's this rock man getting in the refrigerator, which is is pretty strange if out of context. But we all know that, you know, Ben likes to smoke cigars and drink some beers, and, you know, apparently it's not clobbering time, but it's guzzling time. So there you go.
Yeah, I do have questions about that refrigerator, because first off, that greenish acid light coming out of it, it's very radioactive to me. On the one hand, and the colorist, I mean, colors at Marvel in the 80s, I guess we're still, I mean, there was that whole Jim Shooter edict that, you know, color washes and you got to do this quickly. And so there were orders, apparently, to color as quickly as possible. So you've got a lot of, in Marvel Comics of that era, you've got a lot of crowd scenes where the entire crowd is purple, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just to save time, just to make the deadlines.
Yeah, the comic that suffered the most from that for me as a kid was the Transformers. I thought that comic was colored horribly. I mean, they barely ever got the colors right of the characters. And I mean, they were like, you know, like Autobots and Decepticons would be like in the foreground in like one solid color. Yeah. It was like, oh my, it looked like some kid had colored it. It was like, oh God, that's horrible.
Yeah. And it's true here as well. You know, you've got a lot of coloring outside the lines. There's one corner of the refrigerator that isn't colored green between Ben's legs. Which should be. So there's like coloring mistakes because it's being done so quickly, I think. And on such a small panel, it's easy to blotch it up a bit. But there's no icebox to this, a fridge.
No.
Usually there would be two doors maybe. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what's in there because, you know, things that you don't put in a fridge are like, you know, I don't know, canned vegetables or cereal boxes. But that's kind of what looks to be in there. What are those boxes? What are those larger cans that need to be in the fridge? It's not all, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's like packed lunches. Maybe.
Yeah, it is kind of strange. It almost looks more like a cupboard than a refrigerator, but it's clearly a refrigerator because it's got shelves on the inside of the door. Mm-hmm. And
it's white.
Which, I mean, usually most refrigerators open the other way too. This door that I know will open. You know, this is open in the other, it usually opens like you push towards your right to open. And this is, you know, you're pushing the door towards your left to open. So this is kind of, not saying they can't be like that. I think you can actually change on a refrigerator sometimes, change which way you want the door to be.
For lefties.
But, for lefties. And this seems to be in a strange, I don't know, is this a wood paneled room or that's colored, the paneling's colored purple or, Is it striped wallpaper or is this supposed to be some kind of tech facility? Because I assume, you know, Ben is off on his own adventures. This obviously isn't in the Baxter Building or the Four Freedoms Plaza, whatever they were in at the time. I think they were in that. But there's some kind of looks like this mirrored surface hanging in the upper left-hand corner. And Nowadays, I would say that's a TV mounted to the wall, but back then that wasn't very common, obviously, because TVs were still in big, huge wooden cabinets for the most part at this time. So maybe it's a mirror, maybe it is some kind of monitor. They're in some kind of tech facility. I don't know, because I didn't read the comic, so no. I don't know.
No, all we know that the context, I didn't either, but the context is that from the cover of the comic, they're filming a Devil Dinosaur movie, which I desperately want to see. But
oh yeah,
and I guess Ben is probably either a stuntman or a character in there or whatever. It's a movie set, so this is probably right. Somewhere in a trailer in a studio facility. So there could be monitors there. And it almost looks, the way it's colored and staged, it almost looks like there's a window and then there's like this triangular ledge popping out of there. You know, there's just like almost a visual, there's just like an illusion there. It was part of the, what's going on here? What is this background? But again, the backgrounds are done very quickly. Again, very small panel, so not a lot of detail to it. So it's hard to say, you know, exactly where we are. Completely out of context here.
Right, yeah. The only context I got is, I'm guessing the first dialogue caption, the person in the second one refers to that first person as Cher. I'm guessing that's Sharon Ventura, who had been introduced into the comics, and in a few issues from now would become the new Miss Marvel, Miss Marvel number 2. Mm. And then later she would become, she would mutate.
Into a thing herself, yeah.
Yeah, into the She thing, as they sometimes call her. And she would, even before she mutated, she would join the Fantastic Four. Basically, Reed and Sue took off, and for a while were in the Avengers very briefly, and Miss Marvel and Crystal came and joined Ben and Johnny, the Human Torch, in the Fantastic Four for a period, and then she mutated, like we said, into the She thing. So I think that's Sharon Ventura. That's the only other context I have that says the first line.
Okay. So you don't know who Dez is, and Trimble could be, I don't know, the director of the movie.
Right.
Or something, yeah.
Very possible.
Yeah. So, but we haven't read the comic. You know, this isn't about the comic or the story. It's about this one panel and its place in, I guess, in the storytelling. To answer your question about the orientation of the fridge, I'm thinking that, you know, you read a comic left to right and they like to put characters facing right, basically.
Right.
So to make the thing face right, the fridge has to be in that position or else.
Yeah, you're probably right. That's probably exactly. I mean, this is one of those how to draw the Marvel way type moments, you know, where you stop and think about things like this. And I had that book as a kid, and it really did enlighten me on, you know, how here's how you show somebody entering a room, you know, left to right. And you don't just show you show an upshot as Doctor Strange throws the door open, you know, and so it's kind of like, I mean, this is about as exciting as a panel as you're going to get of somebody looking into a refrigerator, you know, I mean. Unless you like go all Neil Adams or something and you put the camera in the refrigerator and you're looking past some of the food as, you know, Ben's getting in there or something. But that might have been a little too dramatic. You don't want to put that much attention on this panel. So as far as the panels of somebody looking through the refrigerator, this is pretty exciting. So
yeah. It's the thing doing it. The sort of Jack Kirby stand-in. You know, it's a monster in a very mundane situation, kind of a Doctor Who kind of concept. So, yeah, it's exciting for that. Did you like the Thing's costume in this era? Because it's not just the shorts, you know, this is the point where he starts to wear a shirt as well.
Yeah, it's almost like a wrestling singlet. It like kind of looks like it's got a belt. And he's got the boots, which it's always kind of weird. They've tried to put the Thing in boots over the years. I always think that's kind of weird. I'm used to seeing his, you know, four rocky toes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of like it. It kind of makes sense. You know, why would you want to go around like shirtless all the time, you know, just in a pair of trunks? I mean, I know that that's a cool look, but it's also probably a lot easier for the artist too, because the more that the Thing's covered up, the less of those rocks they have to draw. Because if somebody, I've just, obviously not professionally, but just for fun, I've drawn the Thing. I've tried to crack the code of drawing the Thing and making him look right over the years. And it's tough. I mean, there is a science to drawing the Thing and making it look right. Cause you can draw it in a way that's like, yeah, that looks like somebody made of rocks, but it sure don't look like the Thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the more they can cover it up, the less of those, all the different, well, you know, this rock is casting a shadow in this direction, but no, this one needs to cast a shadow in the other direction so we can give it some more depth. And Kirby and and the different inkers, especially Joe Sinnott, that helped him kind of develop the actual style that became acceptable as this is what Ben Grimm looks like. Those guys are artistic geniuses to figure this thing out. So, and Ron Wilson was really good at it because, like I said, he drew the thing forever. So,
yeah, because we did see other versions of the thing later on by other artists where, I don't know, he's kind of made of corn pops or something. You know, it's if you make the rocks too small, then it doesn't really work. If you make them too smooth, it doesn't really work. And there have also been various facial rock formations. Here we don't really see his face much. He's very ape-like in his stature and even the, you know, the shape of the face that's seen from three quarters in the back. Sometimes it's like huge eyebrows made of rocks. And so there are different ways to play the thing. They don't always look good, but they're not also mutually exclusive either. You can have different versions that really don't look the same, and yet recognizably the thing.
Right.
Yeah, but this is your standard thing. I guess because Ron Wilson put his stamp on it for the better part of a decade or more, you recognize this as a thing. I like that wrestling one piece, personally. Yeah.
It's a nice variation. He's not going to be in his Fantastic Four uniform during this period because he's off the team at the moment. So it's a nice second outfit for him. I'm surprised there's not a Marvel Legends of this yet. There might be, and I just don't know about it. But just wait. There will be, I'm sure, at some point.
Yeah, probably. I mean, if you want to tell the whole story from, you know what? Once the Marvel Cinematic decides to do Secret Wars, put the Beyonder in there, Keanu Reeves as the Beyonder, that's what's going to happen, man. So then you've got Beyonder World. And by that time, you've got the Fantastic Four in the MCU. All this stuff will be in a movie one day. The Thing in that one piece, not in the Fantastic Four, post Secret Wars, opening a fridge. Watch for it.
And there'll be a YouTube video where some guy's going, and this scene from the movie came straight from The Thing number 31, September 1985. You know, it's
like, that's it.
January 1985. Yeah.
That's it. Any last thoughts on this panel?
I'm kind of glad. I was really happy that, you know, not that I wouldn't mind a panel that didn't have a character that I recognized, but I was happy to get a panel that is like, hey, I know this character. You know, everybody knows The Thing, right? Even if you never even popped open a Fantastic Four comic, there's been enough cartoons and movies, maybe not the greatest of movies, but there have been Fantastic Four movies. Everybody knows The Thing, and it was kind of fun to see. I mean, it's a very Ben Grimm-like thing for him to do, is to just, you know, kind of get his feelings hurt, go and get a beer out of the refrigerator and just kind of, I know when I'm not wanted. I mean, that sounds like, you know, that could be from any Fantastic Four story over the past 50 some years. Yeah. So yeah, it was a prototypical thing here. So,
well, yeah. Thanks, Chris. Tell the good people what you're working on right now.
Oh, well, my wife Cindy and I do the JLU cast. We just wrapped up season one of the episodes. We're going to do a season one wrap up. Then we're going to take a break from JLU cast for a bit, go back to our original Supermates podcast, and this fall do our House of Frankenstein series where we discuss classic horror films and comics that tie into those. I'm also on Superman Movie Minute with Rob Kelly where we're talking about Superman 2. We occasionally do Power Records together as well, me and Rob. And then Ryan and I, believe it or not, Ryan Daly and I are doing Batman Nightcast. We are recording them, and they will be coming out probably before the end of Batman's 80th anniversary, I hope. So,
stop teasing me. Yeah, let's hope sooner than later. I've got my own struggles, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll let you go back to the margins. We'll listen to a short promo, and I'll come back with people's comments on the previous episode. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks. Bye.
Coming soon from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Working together, we saved the planet. And I believe that if we stayed together as a team, we would be a force that could truly work for the ideals of peace and justice.
Every episode.
My name is Jean. I'm a Martian.
Every adventure.
Okay, you guys are so slow.
Every hero.
Whatever you think you're doing, if you present a threat to the world, the Justice League will take you down.
Cindy and Chris Franklin bring you
JLU Cast.
Whatever the future holds, we'll make those choices ourselves.
Don't say you don't love me.
I'll never say that.
Covering the complete animated run of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
And the adventure continues.
There's strength in numbers.
What? Like a bunch of super friends?
More like a Justice League.
Here we go, your feedback, comment by comment. And we're talking about the previous episode, which was called Heartbreak House, with my guest Elise Amel, where we discussed a splash panel from a 1950s romance comic. We just spent the last 20 minutes with Chris Franklin. About that episode, he says, fun show, but makes me miss Lonely Hearts more. Gothos Mansion says, I was a bit surprised. This was originally from 1952. Considering the title, I figured it was influenced by Heartbreak Hotel, which wasn't recorded or released until 1956. Trailblazing. Martin Gray says, fantastic panel. I want to read more. Is that suit serge or tweed? I like that the title picks up on the color of the dress. I'm not fussed about it being neither uncentered nor determinedly to right or left. It's interesting that Idies tells us uppercase is tougher to read than upper or and lower. I can't stand storybook type in comics. It makes everything read at best like whispering, at worst like a children's book. It was one of the many off-putting things about Marvel's Ultimate Comics. About which I completely agree. That I also, I guess we're hardwired to read block print. And yet, my first comics were Tintin, and they don't use all caps, but it was like machine produced as well. It wasn't handwritten lettering. Idies also wanted to answer Martin. She says the theory comes mostly from reading speed tests in the mid to late 20th century, but most graphic designers agree that you have to consider context when making a decision on when to use capital letters. This might be why comics have mostly gone with constant uppercase. It's what readers are used to, and everything else can feel off-putting. Dr. Ange says, great commentary and great panel. Always good to hear a Hohatmu panel member solo. Helps me sort out the vocalizations. As with most of these shows, I want to read the story now. I mean, did they really build this homestead, house, lawn, and landscaping to be dragged elsewhere? As for why the fuss about no boyfriend or husband, perhaps in that time, a woman owning her own house alone was automatically labeled a spinster and not the marrying type? Idiotic by today's norms. Rob Kelly says, Idies is always a delightful guest, no matter what the show. Does she like Bob Dylan or Treasury Comics by any chance? But she hates comics. She said so in the show, Rob. But of course, Idies has her own piece to say. She says, I never liked Star Trek or old school sexism either. So liking is not a prerequisite. I guess Rob could always have her on Film and Water to talk about Mamma Mia or Mamma Mia 2, which she constantly references. And I want to end on a comment by Jack Bond, who wonders if the randomizer has a pattern to it, because we had Explorers from Space with the Man of Steel prequel, then Earth Explorers in Space with Daring Legs, which dovetailed into a romance comic panel. He says, but I believed in the randomizer. So is there a pattern emerging? Is there any link between Heartbreak House and this episode's thing in the fridge? You be the judge, Jack. And as ever, a reminder that if you'd like to do one of these short podcasts, drop me a line, we'll arrange it. You will be handed a comic book panel randomly, and we'll put it up for discussion. Fireandwaterpodcast.com is a great place to leave comments so that I will read them at the end of any given show. My thanks again to my guest, Chris Franklin, and until we refill his seat, the panel is open.